prepare for multi-ball.
Hello, and welcome to Pinball Nerds Podcast, coming all the way from River Hibbert's Nova Scotia to the holes in the side of your head. Introducing your host, Orbital Albert.
That's me.
Take it away.
Hey, thanks.
Welcome back, Pinball Nerds, to episode 285 of your fifth favorite pinball podcast. My name's Orbital Albert. And for today's episode, I'm a little behind, I'm not going to lie. I pride myself on being either the first podcast, if not the first or one of the first podcasts, to talk about new news, right? But this time, I'm going to be last, and I'm sorry. I'm going to be talking about Haggis Pinball dropping the hammer on the competition. That's right. So, first things first, I want to apologize to each and every listener out there for not having an episode up for a week. That is very unlike me. Long story short, I got sick. I lost my voice. I got my voice back. And then one of my chickens started to get sick and got bronchitis. I had to segregate that chicken. The chicken is doing better now, less coughing or sneezing. It's this weird little sound. Anyways, it's probably bronchitis. Please don't say you're not going to come visit me. You're like, no, Orby, you have chicken flu or bird flu or something. And then there's a SARS outbreak and then the coronavirus. And no, everybody here is okay. Everybody's fine. I had a bit of a cold. I had a bit of a flu. I read about it. The chickens can get it when it's very cold like this. And then I felt bad. The same chicken that had got better from bronchitis, I went out there this morning and the very top little, you know, half inch parts of his red clusters on his head, they have names and I forget them. It was starting to freeze, but that's because it was minus 26 this morning without the wind chill, minus 26, minus 33 with the wind chill. So that's like the coldest temperature it's ever got here. And there's no heat in there or anything. Now, normally, chickens that you have here are Chanticleers, which you would keep through the winter. All my Chanticleers were fine. They don't have a big, long, you know, like I have the Foghorn Leghorn, the one you're used to seeing from Looney Tunes. I have three of those and they're the ones who are getting cold, and the one who got sick as well. So, but it's all good. We still get to eat the eggs. Everything's fine. You can't pass it on to humans. Everyone's okay. So if you already are lined up to come visit me this summer here on the homestead, don't worry. You have nothing to worry about. Maybe don't handle the chickens. No, I'm sure it's fine. It's fine. I also wanted to, before we get into this, I wanted to say thank you very much to everyone over there. Mr. Zach Manny, the hardest working guy in pinball, or at least in pinball distribution. I'll say that. And streaming and media, right? The hardest working guy in media anyways, one of them. He allowed for, you know, the path to be paved for the Pinball Network, along with many of the other co-founders who you all know about, because I'm sure you've seen the video by now. And, you know, you've probably, if you're into pinball, you've probably been following this thing. You know, the Pinside Forum is pretty deep on this already. I just want to say thanks to Ken Cromwell over there. A special thanks to Ken Cromwell for doing all the editing for my first episode, which is now up, Pinball Nerds. So if you have Facebook, make sure you like the Pinball Network on Facebook. You'll notice it's the one with all the different podcasters coming together, the podcasting / streaming conglomerate, where I don't want to throw out, you know, I'm not a founding member of the Pinball Network. I'm just a podcaster there, but I'd like to say that my hope is, and so far it's been true. It's been the positive pinball side. And I think that, you know, constructive criticism is good for pinball, but done properly, right? Done with a little bit of class. And I think that all of these, pinball podcasts on there are going to do great. So mine just came out this morning. It is entitled Top 3 with Orby, Episode 1, Players to Watch. Players under 20 to look out for. And it says Orbital Albert discusses the top 3 players under 20. Anyways, if you don't have Facebook, you can always just head over to thepinballnetwork.net and you can listen to all the rad podcasts there. I'm just going to run through a couple of them. I'm sure you guys have probably listened to them, but I just want to give some of my thoughts. First of all, last week we got to listen to February 10th, so it would have only been 5 days ago, because it's the 15th today. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody from yesterday. I freaking heart you, pinball nerds. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. That's part of the reason why this podcast didn't go up yesterday as well, because I was feeling better, but this is a day for Drop Target Danielle, right? My wonderful wife. We went out to go see The Mentalist. The poor guy screwed up on the finale, but you know what? He did a great job with all of them. And even the best mentalists out there can't nail it all the time. But yeah, we went out to Trider's and got some craft beer. We had an awesome night. Anyways, let's go back to some of these shows on the Pinball Network. The pilot went up, The Pinball Show, which is like their mainstay, like their main show, right? So that was with Ken Cromwell and Zach Menny. It was awesome. They discussed, of course, the Haggis Hammer. They also talked about Rick and Morty being on Stupid Morning. Excuse me, BS. They talked about some rumors coming up. And, of course, your favorite, Pinball Market Trends, the segment that Mr. Menny himself loves and Dennis Kriesel famously hates. Dennis will be on next week. I'm looking forward to hear Dennis and Zach back there doing their thing again. And I'm sure Ken will be in there as well. It's gonna be interesting. It's going to be neat to hear all the different people coming in and out of that show. I think it's a flagship show for the reason. I think that's probably going to be the most listened to show on the Pinball Network. Most likely. You never know, but most likely. I mean, it has the two guys who are from, you know, the two more listened to, more popular podcasts. Of course, Ken Cromwell, formerly of Special Knit Pinball Podcast, and then Zach Menny of This Week in Pinball. Now, for those of you who are missing some This Week in Pinball talk, because, of course, you know, Zach's not doing it, you know, anymore, but you can always go listen to Twippy Talk under This Week in Pinball. But let's go back to the second show that premiered. That was on February 11th. It's kind of neat. They're kind of doing almost one a day here. Silver Ball Stories for the Love of Creature. So this is with the host Joshua Jacobs, who I hadn't heard too much before that. Was he maybe like a correspondent or something? I feel like I had heard him somewhere. I have only got to listen to maybe about the first half or so of that, but it's really interesting. It's neat how it's done. It's told like a story with interesting sound effects, and I really, really, really like it. I want to listen to that. I purposely wanted to listen to that as like, I'm kind of saving some of these ones that are not time relevant to listen to just whenever I either A, run out of podcasts, or B, just like at nighttime if I want to be told a story before I go for a little nap. And I, of course, eat, breathe, sleep, pinball as I sleep it, right? I like to listen to, I always think about pinball before I go to bed, almost always. All right, what was the next one? So on the next day, on the 12th, was the final round. This was probably, I'm not going to lie, it's up there. It's either my favorite or my second favorite. And I'm guessing listens-wise, it's got to be up there as well with the Pinball Show. But this, of course, is with Jeff Teolis of the Pinball Profile. Which is Pinball Profile, still around, making awesome episodes. Make sure you check out Jeff on there if you haven't. But Martin Robbins, of course, from Head to Head, which is no longer exists. This is where they talk a lot about competition play. And I think because it was the first episode, they talked about a lot of like entry-level competition stuff. They weren't getting into the nitty-gritty of it yet. And because of that, you know, there was some things in the episode I had heard before. But just listening to the cadence of Jeff and Martin talk and their camaraderie, and you can tell they're buddies in real life. And I really liked that. I thought it was done well. The sound was great. The editing was great. The content was excellent. So make sure you listen to that, especially if you're a competition player. You know what I mean? If you're more of like a collector or whatever, and you like to hear about what's going on in pinball, probably the Pinball Show is going to be your main jam. Doesn't mean that you're not going to listen to the final round once in a while. But if you're a competition player, you know, it could be that the final round is your main jam. Who knows? And if you're more of a pinball historian, maybe Silver Ball Stories with Joshua Jacobs is your jam. That's what I like about this pinball channel, is there's a little bit of everything for everybody. Some of the podcasts are a bit longer. Some of them are a bit shorter. My very first episode's only like 14 minutes and 30 seconds with an intro and everything else. Sorry, I have the Romantic Rites remix from Death from Above in my head because I just listened to it like three times when I played for each of the both Hayden and one of my sons, I played the intro to the new, the top three with Orby. Anyways, Kenya killed it. Who the heck's voice is that? I don't know whose voice that is. The voice in the background, but I'm going to find that out. And I told Ken that I really wanted that song. So I love those guys. They're from Toronto. They make really rad kind of dance rock and roll. And they just kill it. So I wanted them for my first 30 seconds. And yeah, that's how they got in there. Then on February 13th, the next day, yeah, it is 1 week. This is cool. This is the Pinball Show midweek. So TPS midweek. So this was with Zach Menny and Craig Bobby, who Toronto gentleman who was into pinball, who I've never met, which is weird because I pretty much know everybody in Toronto into pinball because I essentially lived like on the outskirts. No, I was like 2 hours away in London, but you know, I was from Toronto. I don't think Craig Bobby goes to a lot of pinball tournaments, but he's definitely a big pinball super fan because I recently added him. Thank you, Craig Bobby, for accepting my friend request. By the way, if you're listening and you'd like to add me to Facebook, that way you can see when I'm going to post my, I don't post every episode I do for Pinball Nerds podcast because I do so many. I don't post every one of those on my personal page, but if I have a really important or big one or like, you know, I'm working with a new network like the Pinball Network, I'll be sure to post it like I did on there today. So you guys can add me and Albert. If you can't figure out how to spell that, maybe we shouldn't be friends. And no, I'm just kidding. It's just like Fat Albert. Hey, hey, hey. Say spelled the same minus the F-A-T, bitch. Okay, so last name is Agar, A-G-A-R. You can go ahead and add me there. But let's go back to this. So the midweek is kind of like, it was enjoyable. It was neat. I think my assumption is that Zach's going to kind of bring in different people. Maybe even Orville Albert, who knows. No, I'm just kidding. I already have a show. I don't need to be on the midweek show and then the Pinball Nerds podcast. It's you're already getting too much, Orby. But, you know, someday I would really like to host a show with Zach. I think that would be really fun. Are you listening, buddy? No, I'm just kidding. It would be fun. It would be fun. Because as fun as it is, just sitting here, I feel like my co-hosts are kind of each and every one of you guys, you Pinball Nerds back there. Every time I put out an episode, I get a lot of good, we'll say constructive criticism. It's usually primarily positive because if anyone sends me negative BS, I usually just don't respond. So, okay. And what came out on Valentine's Day? The Silver Ball Chronicles episode one. This was about Steve Ritchie before the mullet. Love the term. Love the term. This is the Silver Ball Chronicles with my bud, my boy, David Dennis there from Fredericton. But 2 hours away from me, David Dennis, I will see you in 7 days today on the 22nd. We're going to be playing a little pinball tournament down there in St. John. And Ron Hallett, of course, and still around, didn't leave the show. He's still there. Don't worry. And Ron, I was just kidding by saying you were the better half, okay, of the Slam Tilt Pinball podcast. Of course, everybody knows the better half is Bruce. Just kidding. Just kidding. You're both awesome. And you know who else is awesome? David Dennis and Ron Hallett. Guys, it's weird. Like, I don't know if they talked on the phone lots before this, but they seem to really get along very well. And I thought that was cool. The nice part was if David Dennis was kind of talking a little bit more about the history of a machine that Steve Ritchie worked on, quite often, if he hadn't played it, because he hasn't been to nearly as many expos and shows as Ron Hallett, then Ron could say, oh, no, I have played that here, and it was good, or it was meh, or it was, you know, like, so that was kind of neat. I haven't listened to all of it. I'm about halfway through, but I am absolutely loving it. I think it's kind of neat, because you've got this, the one that's more of a storytelling, just a single person narrative, which is, you know, told as like one cohesive story. And then you've got the Silver Ball Chronicles, which is kind of several smaller stories about different things that happened to Steve Ritchie kind of, well, before he got his mullet, right? So really, really proud of those guys. That episode came out great. I can't even believe, honestly, that I can even mention a show in this list. But yeah, it was nice. I got to come out with a show today. I think it's going to be bi-weekly on the Pinball Network as far as I know. Maybe step it up to weekly if we get enough listeners and you guys like it. If you do have an idea for top three with Orby, I don't mind you just messaging me under Albert Agar. I don't think I'm going to have a specific Pinball Network like email or Gmail. I would prefer not to. If you guys could email, you could also email me at pinballnerds@gmail.com, or you can just message me through my Facebook page under Pinball Nerds Podcast. So you have three different ways you can contact me if you have an idea for a top three that you'd like to do, or possibly you'd like to co-host with me, because that's my idea on the show, is like I'd like to do like a not that I could get Keith Ellowen on the show, but if I could, maybe I can someday. But top three tips to win Pinburg with Keith Ellowen. And he would be listing the top three tips that he has, and I would just be asking him questions about it and how like a mediocre player like myself, okay, I mean, not mediocre is being a little humble, like above average, like, you know, I'm around 2,300th or something. So, I mean, the top 1%, the top 10% would be the top 8,000 players. The top 1% would be, the top 800 players. So I'm in around the top 3%. Now, that being said, there's very few players who have played 150 tournaments or 200 tournaments like me, official IFBA tournaments, and are ranked lower. So I'm not bragging at all. Like, anyone who plays as many millions of hours as pinball as me is probably going to be ranked as high as me, most likely. You know what I mean? So I'm not bragging about being a great player, but I certainly have put in my dues and, you know, played hundreds of machines and tried to learn rule sets on, geez, at least well over 100, and, you know, attended lots of different formats and really worked on my skills for a long period of time. And, you know, again, not bragging about how good of a player I am, just how long I've spent time and energy working on that. Now, I have gone off track way too much, which is something that I'm going to attempt to not do as often on the Pinball Network, which I think I did a good job of, but I apologize to each and every listener who was coming here to listen to me, to hear what I had to say about Damien and Haggis, because we're now going to get into that, Pinball Nerds. We're now going to get into that. Here it goes. I am not a very technical guy. I don't work on my machines a lot. I don't know how to do a lot of my machines. I don't know how to fix a lot of my machines. I don't understand the technical aspects of how acrylic works and how the acrylic will fasten to the playfield and whether or not that playfield will start to yellow after 20 or years. But I do know that I've tried to play on a table before with a playfield protector, and I did not like the ball spin. It hurt my brain. Have you ever tried to play on a table that's not level? Like you're at some crappy like gas station or laundromat or the back of, I don't know, like just it's someone's house who just hasn't leveled the machine yet maybe. And it hurts your brain. You're like, like you start hitting your head. You're like, no, I can't play on here. Like you're watching where the ball should come straight to your flipper. It just goes, and does like a full hook to the left and then just drops straight down between your flippers. You're like, no, I would just rather not play pinball than play on that. Well, I've had a couple times where the play field affected the gameplay so poorly, including using a play field protector, including just really crappy, torn up, ripped up. And I don't mean a little bit of dimples or something pooling around the posts. I'm talking about like a gnarly frickin', like there's like someone had taken either knife marks and put it through there where the ball or there's so much cupping around the inserts that the ball keeps getting hung up on there. Especially like older EMs. When a play field is changing the play of the game that bad, like that drastically, and I am not that picky. Like I don't get out a microscope or anything like that. I certainly don't get out a black light to find out if a company put in black light artwork I didn't know about, like Stern did. I will say this. I do want to do a quick mention on Stern before we go back to Haggis here for a second. But I genuinely feel like it was kind of sneaky to put something in there, and I just feel it was dishonest. I don't give a crap about them requiring you to pay something else for a mod after the fact. I don't even care that they added the artwork to everything and then they said to make the artwork look better, to make the mod work, you got to pay for this. That's all well and dandy. If someone wants to fork up the extra $300 for it, they can. If someone doesn't want to, they don't have to. I heard so many people saying, oh, you have to. You have to get it on there. I don't think that you have to get it. It looks cool. I think if you're an operator, it would be worth your time and money because you could have, especially if you have like hardcore pinball nerds like me around there
who are saying, oh, maybe there's one other location in your town that has Stranger Things and it does have that kit. Maybe they're going there more often because it does seem like a neat feature. I don't think you need to have it. Is it worth $300? I don't know. For me personally, as a guy who just usually doesn't get toppers, or I like to spend $20 on a topper, like I get a bobblehead, or right now with my son Hayden, he's downstairs still working on it. I'm working on my topper for my Roller Coaster Tycoon, which is a working Kinex roller coaster. It's like $70 Canadian for one of these bad boys. I know that's only like $40 American, but this is like the most amount of money I've ever spent on a topper. So as someone who doesn't spend money on extras in anything in life, not just pinball, I mean, I spend extra on getting, okay, to be fair, I do spend the extra amount of money on getting really good craft beer, really, really, really good artisan food. But I mean, I don't spend extras on cars or houses or clothing or, I don't know, I don't get a lot of fancy stuff, right? So I, for home play, it does look pretty rad. I guess if you're already spending, that's the problem, is if you're already spending $6,000, what is that? 10%, it's less than 5% added onto the price. So that's less than taxes in most states and provinces. Yeah, I guess you'd have to get the kit. I just feel like it's a little bit sneaky. I just want you to be open and honest. When I'm buying a product, I want you to tell me what features it comes with and what add-ons I have to get. I don't want to find out down the road I could possibly get these. I also do think that there should be an option. And even if Stern charges you an extra $20, which is ridiculous, but I'm just saying there should be an option to get this thing installed. Again, I'm not a super duper handy guy, and I just don't want to be. My Roller Coaster Tycoon is an example. I played for the first 3 months till I got a stuck ball in it and had to take the glass off. And that's how I like it. Now, I wasn't playing it. I was probably playing it 2 or 3 games a day, or if I missed a day, maybe another day I was playing like 10 games and then we'd play it in a tournament and play 15, 20 more, something like that. So it was getting a fair amount of play, but it's just nice to know for 3 months, I just played a machine and I never had to take the glass off. For no reason did I have to put the key in the coin door and turn it, right? So anyways, getting back to Haggis, I want to commend Damien for doing what he did and working on a solution, but I'm just not sure if it's a solution for a problem. I would have to guess, and this, I'm a big numbers guy. You know that. I was talking about how I'm in the top 3% of IFPA. I would have to guess less than 3% of people who purchase a pinball table, less than 3%. This is my sincere guess from reading a lot of Pinside forums, from speaking with a lot of other pinball nerds, less than 3%. So in your life, if you buy 100 new pinball machines, less than 3 of them should you have serious, and I'm not talking about the tiniest little bit of pooling in the corner that if you lift an insert, you can kind of get out a microscope and go, oh, I think I, no, I'm talking about things that either affect gameplay or sincerely, genuinely change the resale value. And again, I'm talking about more like a player's condition pin. So say you bought it new in box, you kept it 2-3 years, you go to sell it. After that many hundreds of games, you're going to have some wear and tear. You're going to have some scratches. You're going to have some dents. You're going to have some stuff. It's going to happen. It's going to be played. It's meant to be played. They're not just art pieces you put in the corner and you put in a little box and go, oh my God, it's so pretty. It's already in a box. Play the freaking thing, right? So I don't know. I don't know if maybe Damien is spending too much time and energy on perfecting the plastic as opposed to perfecting the game, because it seems to me like if they put that much time and energy into perfecting the game and how smooth the shots were, and I know the scoop had issues with it going straight down. Again, I'm not saying anything against Haggis. I'm glad Haggis is attempting to do this, okay? I want to commend them for trying to do something different. I am not convinced until I flip it, though, that it's not going to change the ball spin. I can't imagine how a surface so different from wood to going to acrylic type plastic couldn't affect the ball spin. And that's all what I was saying earlier, is when you go to play an unlevel machine, how that bugs your brain. If now, because the surface is completely different, and we're not talking a thin layer of this either, that looked pretty thick. It looked thicker than most of the wood on playfields, to be honest, on that playfield, certainly. When you have that much acrylic, I don't know if the ball's going to get more, and I apologize, I don't know what podcast said this, but someone was saying, I don't know if it was Slam Tilt or not. I know they recently had a new one, which was awesome, but someone was saying when you first hit the flipper with the ball, they're like, the ball does not roll. The ball skids. So Damian doing like the 5 million back and forth with the ball gently rolling, that's nice. But the only way it would have been a real test is if he had put, you know, like an air driven, basically you'd have to have a flipper in the bottom of the box and the flipper hitting it up. If the flipper had done 5 million flips of hitting the ball, and we were in, and the box was much longer, so we were able to see the effects on all the different parts of the play field, then I would feel more comfortable with it. The thing is, like, I know, I believe, is it Dr. John? I know someone who's a big collector in Australia is getting the first machine, okay? And I believe he has a collection of, like, 20 to 30 machines. If you have 20 to 30 machines and you can afford it, yeah, I would definitely get a Haggis pinball. But without flipping it, I'm not going to sign up for it. And even if the acrylic didn't change the game, I just wouldn't pay $5,000 for Haggis. I just wouldn't. I just couldn't. When I know I can get a used Jurassic Park Pro coming in around $5,000 probably soon, maybe $5,500, there's no way, because I know the shots are not going to be, they're just not. With just two flippers, with no ramps, with one scoop, with... there's just not tons going on in the game. I think the code does look as good as it can look. I don't even hate that mini screen underneath the thing. I just don't know how the acrylic's going to affect it in the future. I don't know if it's going to yellow. I don't trust it not to yellow, especially like in my pinball room. It gets a lot of sunlight. Now, it's going across all day long, but there's these big giant windows. I do pull the blinds, you know, together when I think of it. But most days, I want that hot sunlight coming in there, heating up the room. Right? Like heating up my house for free. And I find it gets really kind of gross in rooms if you just leave the blinds down, you don't ever go in there. So I don't know. And I guess none of us know. Not even Damien could possibly know. You know, a lot of bars, you'll tell the bars, oh, this is an acrylic play field. You don't want to put it anywhere near a window. And they'll go, oh, yeah, sure, no problem, mate. And then like five, I don't know why I said mate. And then like 5 days later, you know, there's a new bar manager or something, and they just, well, they move the machine because there's a new pool table coming in or jukebox, or they want to put more tables there. And all of a sudden it's over by a window. And then you don't know that play field all of a sudden looks 10 times worse than a wooden play field would have looked in 5 years. We don't know. And I don't want to, you know, say anything to cause someone not to buy it. But I just think that I heard a lot of the other podcasts getting really exciting and saying, this is so cool. If this little guy can do it, what's wrong with Stern? What's wrong with JJP? What's wrong with Deep Root? You don't think these other big companies with millions of dollars and hundreds of people behind them haven't at least thought about this? There's got to be a reason. I don't believe the reason of, oh, because they want you to keep buying more. I don't believe that at all. I have a 2003 Stern. It's Roller Coaster Tycoon. It had less than 2000 plays on a home use only approximately from what we could tell before Mike Dimas, shout out, by the way, formerly of the Canadian Pinball Podcast. Like to have him on here soon to maybe chat about what he's up to and maybe what happened with the podcast there a little, but we'll see. I'll send you out a message there, Mike. Mike did just get his Paragon up and going, and it looks incredible, by the way. That's the machine with a super wide body with a pop bumper on the left where the left out lane would be usually. And it's really neat. You get to sometimes use the pop bumper to bring the ball back. But going, oh, and shout out to all the London, Ontario pinball players. They've got their finals today at Dimas's house. So cheers, Matt McGoffin. You got to go because I'm not there, buddy. No, he might have gone anyways, but good luck, Melvis. Okay. I just want to be clear that I do think it's great when smaller companies take chances and try to do new things. And certainly when Spooky Pinball brought on Scott DeNisi, they had no clue. How could they have had any clue that Total Nuclear Annihilation would become the smash independent hit that it is today? And who would have known that that little company could sell 750 Rick and Morty machines, 750 anything machines, in a number of hours, perhaps quicker than any other sale. I mean, I'm assuming Jurassic Park sold 750 in the first few hours, but I don't know. Anyways, today on Jack Danger's Dead Flip channel, we're going to get to see Scott DeNisi play a little bit of Rick and Morty. So I will be watching that. You should watch that as well. And until next time, Pinball Nerds, I'm going to leave you with a little bit of Metric, Help I'm Alive Acoustic from K-Rock Studios.
Can you hear my heart?
Eat, sleep, and breathe, pinball.